reverse repeater pair?
Actually, it was coordinated at link frequencies, not repeater frequencies.
Okay. I would do an adjacent channel power ratio on a known good sharp filter, you know, brick wall filter, spectrum analyzer, or what would you call it now, site monitor type thing. Find out if the paging transmitter really is clean in all of your particular channels. If not, you've got to move your channel, you've got to clean them up. Well, they're at the end of their life of their particular industry, so moving them is going to be very difficult. Moving them meaning making them change their hardware. They're not going to listen to you. They're not making any profit anymore, so they're not going to be very enthusiastic about making changes that cost any money or cost any man hours. After that, I think you're forced into antenna nulling and using methods to increase the dynamic range of a receiver. Every receiver that's not running on a battery can be increased in dynamic range as long as you're willing to pour some power into it. The problem is that handy talkies, for instance, they're trying to use minuscule amount of battery power. Therefore, there's very little biasing of the receiver stages. Therefore, that's the major reason they've got a tissue paper front end, K2LIW.
K2LIW, KU2, guys. Well, I don't think I've got the problem with mixing products. Actually, what I should do is drag my Tektronix. It's got a program in it which does the analysis for you. I could do that. But what I think is happening is they use a ceramic filter, a transistor, a ceramic filter. And I think what happens is that eventually at the mixer, it's way beyond the intercept point of that receiver. And just that large signal just makes it impress itself on the really weak one.
Yes, it does. But what you're describing is the intercept point of that receiver. And you're a smart enough guy to know how to move that intercept point. It's going to cost you some milliwatts of power in those stages to do it. You may have to yank out some of those low-level front-end transistors and plug in a transmitter driver stage transistor in order to be able to bias it up high enough. And some of the modern-day driver transistors for transmitters have got extremely good noise figures. You use that properly biased in the front end, and you can end up with something that's a lot closer to bulletproof in dynamic range.
You know, you're brilliant. You just gave me a wonderful idea. Because I can see that, I don't have the schematic in front of me, but I remember exactly how it's put together. Don't forget, the radios that we're using really are designed for mobile, and they don't consider, you know, they don't need to spend the money on that, as opposed to a fixed location where there's a lot of RF.
You got it. This is the problem that Space Shuttle Number 6 with Owen Garriott had in 1985. He was using a very respected brand, Motorola Handy Talkie. Well, that handy talkie is battery operated, saving battery power was a big claim to fame. It had a tissue paper front end. He was 160 nautical miles above the center of the United States. He was looking at a 2,000 mile diameter of humanity all at once, and all those people were screaming at him. That front end was smoking. And that front end, I mean, all the laboratory tests they did on that did not simulate that environment. They were worrying about sensitivity and viswear of the antenna when it was taped to the window and all these things. They definitely should not have been using a unmodified handy-talkie front end in that environment. You know what happens when you take a handy-talkie to the observation deck of the Empire State Building. The darn thing will jump out of your hand. Over to you, Eric.
Well, I can tell you for sure you hear nothing. Although it's funny, I was sitting up on Empire with, talking about 5-2. 5-2 wasn't too bad. It was from a guy that was like 40 miles away. But, you know, trying to tune some of the local repeaters, you couldn't hear them. It's just there's too much other junk saturating the front end. But, yeah, you know, that's a really cool idea. I think I'm going to try something like that. It's all service mounts, so it's pretty easy to yank the stuff out. Speaking of which, you don't happen to have any pin diodes that run at 900 or a gig, do you?
And those are pretty low frequencies for pins, and no, I do not. I was on a search some number of years ago for a pin that operated at those frequencies, and a real pin is rare. People almost give up and just flip over to a real diode and say, the hell with pinning, just to put a lot of current to an ordinary diode. To get the transit time low enough, a correction long enough to get good operation at those frequencies, puts you into a very small number of selectable pins.
Yeah, well, actually, I've used a bunch of them, and I just have to get more, that's all. I'm trying to do it at low cost. Actually, one of the radios blew one up. I can just order it from Motorola, and that'll be that. Well, you know, if you've got the time, you want to look at what we're doing, your input would be greatly appreciated.
Have I got the time? You know, I retired in 2000. I now work 5 days a week during the week, and I've accepted a new client, and I now work on weekends. Have I got the time? And when you and I see eye to eye, I'm going to give you an eyeful, an earful. No, I can't volunteer for this one. I like going to your meetings, and I'll do a little bit of convincing and a little bit of cavelling, but no, I can't volunteer for it. I know what you're going to be into here. And the first thing I would do, since you know you're about to increase the... I still would favor the antenna tuning, by the way. It doesn't require rigging. Serious rigging. If they set it to the nearest couple of inches of the right vertical spacing, they'll get most of the node you're looking for. And there's ways you can tune it beyond that, too, by bringing down two separate pieces of cable. But the next thing I would do after the adjacent channel power ratio of the pager, to make sure he's not putting a lot of steam into your channel, the next thing I would do is take your particular receiver, slowly increase the signal into it in a two-tone test, and by probing with very high impedance probe, walk down each stage of your receiver and look at the intermods at each stage to the two-tone test. Find which link of the chain, which one of the amplifier stages is the one with the lowest intercept point. Find out how many dB lower it is than the next adjacent one. In other words, by measurements, you find out how many stages you're going to about to change. And if you're lucky, you'll be changing nothing but the RF amplifiers and mixer. And after that, your IF filter will protect you. Your roofing filter will protect you. So maybe there's only two stages that you've got to change, but by a two-tone measurement and probing with very high impedance probes, you'll find out what is the intercept point if it's not already published in your data sheet of the rig. What is the intercept point, and therefore you can calculate how far you've got to move it. You already know what the signal levels are you've got to live with, and so you've got a quantifiable problem, and therefore on paper you can find out how difficult it's going to be to get from here to there. If the calculation is that you only need 5 dB more intercept point, that's easy. If you need 50 dB more intercept point, consider another approach. Back to you, Eric.
Roger, K2IWK2 again. Well, maybe I can get you for 5 minutes to look at one thing that's not too far from your house. But if you could just visualize actually, the antenna issue, I think it's like 150 feet up to power, so it becomes a bit of an issue. It's not like on the roof or anything. So that antenna is like, you know, we're just grateful that they gave us the antenna. And we don't have to pay for it. It becomes part of the package. It so happens that it was available. It's quite out, it's easy. You can reach the antenna. It's seldom it's a different story. But just visualize this. There's an antenna connection essentially loosely coupled into a ceramic filter, a single stage of RF gain, another ceramic filter, and then a ring diode mixer. It's a mini circuit SBL1. So, you know, the SBL1 very well published and very widely used. But I don't know how much of an improvement I can make on that.
The first thing required for the mixer to give its performance that mini circuit guarantees is that, number one, you've got to be giving it a strong enough LO power. Number two, the harmonic content of your LO has to be controlled. Number three, he measured that mixer with 50 ohms DC to light as the terminating impedance of the RF port and the IF port. In reality, in your circuit, The IF port is looking into an IF filter. The RF part is looking into an RF filter. Maybe it's looking into an amplifier, but it may not be looking into 50 ohms. Because your mixer doesn't have the same terminating impedances that Harvey Kaling guaranteed in his data sheet, his data sheet and your performance could be very different. Go ahead.
No, understood. I think tomorrow I can find myself another generator that'll make it at that frequency, which I actually have downstairs. I'm going to do a couple of two-tone tests and see where things are actually at. Yeah. All right. Now, you have a point there, because I believe, and I'm just doing this from memory, the output is ceramic filter, and the ceramic filter is supposed to be around 50 ohms, but I think they're more like 30. That goes directly into the mixer. The LO input is coming from, I can say that it's a source impedance. I don't know if I could guess at that. But I think it's capacitively coupled and then loaded. But it comes out of a really interesting VCO that Motorola makes. It's not a piece of substrate. It's in its own sealed can. And I've looked at the output of that, and the phase noise is incredibly nice. They did a really good job with that. So I think the harmonic content of that particular VCO is, and it's right on frequency, by the way, is very good.
Okay, so you might have a clean LO. The fact that your ceramic filter are looking into the mixer for the RF port is 30 ohms versus 50 ohms. That's a 1.5 or whatever it is one. Not perfect, but there's something worse, and that is for the mixer to give the Intamon performance, the undesired harmonics that the mixer is generating, the M by N products, have to be resistively terminated. If any of them reflect back because of non-resistive termination, they get reconverted to energy at some of the frequency you don't like. That ceramic filter may be giving you a medium good impedance in the band. But on the second harmonic, bear in mind that the third order intermod is second harmonic of one minus the minus or plus the fundamental of the other. As such, that I guarantee that ceramic filter is not a 50 ohm termination at the second harmonic frequency. So even if the ceramic filter was 50 ohm, that doesn't solve the problem. To get around this problem, quite often people will put an attenuator in between the filter and the mixer so that it sees something closer to a 50 ohm termination, DC to light. Either that, or if you're real smart, you design something that's called a constant impedance filter, which is something deep in the bag of tricks of only some very smart RF engineers that know how to do that. And to do it at 900 megs is not super simple. So, yes, the attenuator is hurting the noise figure. You've got to make it up with the gain of the amplifier in front of it. The gain of the amplifier has to be running at pretty high power to both have the right amount of gain and still have enough intercept point left. High dynamic range receivers, and I've worked on some of them, you got to do some really strange things at times. Back to you, Eric.
Hey, 60 defense.
All right. I'll pick you up in a second. Well, you've got to consider that these radios is, they're built for commercial use. They have a, 25 megahertz split between receive and transmit. They only transmit down low, and they receive up high and transmit up high, so, and then they're very broadband. They go from, they're originally designed to go from 930 to 931 to 940, something like that. They cover a bit of territory, so you've got to consider it quite broad. And the other thing that I'm wondering is, maybe I'm just saturating the front-end transistor. And when you drive that transistor to saturation, all bets are off on everything. All right, Dick, give me your thoughts and then turn it over to the other station.
You now know more of the variables. DPZ, you got it.
AJ Carey, I just read the mail. I work with those balance mixers, micro mini circuits. I used the 3dB keypads on all the ports and made sure the impedances were matched, and they worked out pretty well, even though you had inherent loss. You have to bring up the gain in other areas, but at least the mixture is looking at all three ports terminated properly.
That's the words. If you take the mixers of any brand name and you look at their spur chart, and the chart looks beautiful, and you put it in your circuit and you get something extremely different. As you dig deeper and deeper, you'll discover that the chart was made with ideal laboratory instrumentation, where all three ports of the mixer had pure source for the LO, 50 ohm pure source, and that source was 50 ohm DC to light in source impedance. Very few local oscillators fulfill that requirement. The best a local oscillator usually does is that it's near 50 ohms at the oscillating frequency, and it's essentially a short circuit at all other frequencies, unless it's followed by a pad before the mixer. You literally have to pad down some number of significant decibels of padding on all three ports of the mixer if you want to get the performance that that chart had from the manufacturer. You'd be amazed how many people forget some of those details. Thank you, Eric.
Bingo!
Nice. Nice, Al, for that little tidbit. I'm going to figure this out one way or another. Well, I'm changing it to a receiver designed to be in that type of environment. I've got my work cut out for me in terms of looking for, it's only 30 degrees that I want to get, that I need. Or maybe it's only like 4 or 5 dB that I need to drop the other signal before I get into the operating range of what this thing was originally designed for.
Who was your other station, KPJ?
Dick. Okay. I've run out of words. I'm in the listening mode. Yeah, I'm amazed you are too. This is the latest we've ever gone. I don't think we should accept any more emails tonight unless you want to. It's up to you. You want to start tying the ribbons on it? I didn't think you were here. I thought this was a private conversation. I'm sorry about that. Over to you, Mel.
Just read the mail. I guess I'll have to leave this for guys discussing this young fellow about this the QRP and a quarter wave ground plane vertical, and they asked about his friends that he can roll up a Uncle Coax and make a reasonably high subsea. He said, well, he most likely meant an XL, there's more to it than that. This quarter wave ground plane vertical that's fed with 450 ohm ladder line, I think I'm going to leave that for next week because it gets it. There's a lot more to this discussion and why they specified the 4-to-1 balance. I see what the problem is here. There's more to it than that. Over.
Okay, he probably wants to use 450 ladder line because he knows it's low in insertion loss, but most ground plane antennas on HF frequencies are literally mounted on Mother Earth, and running ladder line across the lawn to an antenna that's on the ground is less than desirable. It's not a killer, but it's less than desirable. That's really the world where coax should be used. So there is a mixture there that's a difficult way to go. And should he really be using a quarter wave ground plane if he's got some kind of a support that's high enough, I think you should strongly consider, if he likes vertical polarization, a pure, vertically polarized, full, halfway dipole, or the electronic equivalent of it by mechanical shrinking techniques with loading coils, zigzagging, and top hat capacitors. Once you build a purely vertically polarized, halfway dipole, all of this rigmarole of establishing a zillion wires in the ground for the counterpoise, the ground plane, all of that requirement goes away. it's a nice comfortable feeling that you're making a substantial antenna as you lay down all the way, all those quarter wave ground plane wires, all those ground plane radios, all those counterpoise radios. It gives you a feeling that you're really doing something. The bottom line, though, is that the antenna is very close to the Earth, and some altitude would help if you're in an urban environment. If you're out in the desert where it's nice and flat, yeah, against the ground can work pretty well. In an urban environment, every bit of altitude helps to get above those trees, buildings, water towers, all that jazz that's out there. You want that signal to be launched into space. You want it to be launched clear of that jazz. Altitude helps. So in an urban environment, quarter-wave ground plane antennas, I think, is a tough way to go. You've had a number of emails where guys have compared the results between that and some ratty old dipole in the tree, and then mystified as to why the ratty old dipole works so well compared to this beautiful gold-plated thing in the backyard. Back to you, Mel. KQLAW.
Hey, guys. Do you guys want to continue? Because the thing's going to put itself to sleep in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, I think we should start signing off. I think we've had enough for TechNet number 1143 of the series that began in September 1982. Mel and I, if we survive all this jazz, if there is the next time, as they say on that sports show, we'll be back next week. Back over to you, Mel.
Yeah, I'll leave this for next week because it's more to it than that, a lot more to it. This is the quarter-wave ground plane vertical that was designed with 450 ohm lateral line because it was for a QRP system, Dick. A QRP rig is for this QRP club developed this stuff, and they did have a modification on it that you can convert over to coax by using this 4-to-1 thallium and all. And I know what they're talking about. I know what this question is, so I'll leave for next week. I'll just say it's more to it than that. What you're alluding to, because I know what the situation is with the vertical system. I know what he's alluding to, so I just say we'll leave for next week. Good night, all. Take care. Have a great week, Dick, and I'll catch up with you next week. This is K2KEY.
Bye-bye, you all. If there is a next time, as they say. Goodbye from the wild world of sports, if there is a next time.